Okay, so last couple of weeks we've been doing in the shiurs, we have been building up really an introduction to David HaMelech, and next week we're going to launch into David proper. This week, one of the great ways to understand David is to understand his foil. And David's foil in Sefer Shmuel is, of course, Shaul HaMelech. So Shaul, who is a phenomenally complex personality, we're going to try to boil him down to 45 minutes. We'll do the best we can. And the way we're going to do that is we're going to point out several themes of Shaul. We're going to have one main point at the beginning. We're then going to look at several themes, each one of which is either parallel or contrast to David. And then we'll take a step back and try to just look at his career as a whole. Okay. So I'm going to load up the screen share. So it's coming in. It's great timing. Title here is "The King Was Too Good." So we'll see what that means. You know, normally when people think about Shaul HaMelech, so they think of him, I don't know if failure is too strong a word. Might be a fair description, is a failure. Definitely a disappointment. Definitely not someone on the same level as David. But if we look at a few sources very quickly, we see that actually Shaul really was an amazing king. And we saw some of this last week when we discussed the military reality. We looked at the maps and we understood the strategy and the geography and the different nations all around. But Shaul really does amazing things. He's introduced to us as somebody who was amazingly good. Bachor Vatov Ein Ish Mi Bnei Yisrael Tov Manu. There was nobody from all of Israel who was as good as he was, taller than the rest of the people. But not only was he good, not only was he tall, Mefarshim all say that the goodness here is referred to his midos. He does impressive things. He's the founding father of the kingship. He takes 12 diverse, split, feuding tribes from Sefer Shoftim who have two major civil wars in Sefer Shoftim, and they have a third almost civil war. And he imposes unity, organization, creates an army, creates a government. You know, you think about everything that George Washington had to do in setting up America. Shaul faces the same challenges. It takes immense force of will to start something from nothing. All the zakenim, all the elders and tribal leaders who have to cede a lot of their authority and power to Shaul, that's not something that's easily done. It's not going to be done by just some wallflower. But Shaul pulls it off, and the Navi captures it by saying, Shaul lachad hamalucha. He conquered the kingdom, right? It took force of will. And he accomplishes impressive things militarily. We saw he defeats enemies all around, Edom, Moab, Ammon, Sova up in the north, the Plishtim over in the west, Amalek down in the south. He gets rid of idolatry. Navi says after Shmuel's death that Shaul got rid of the Avot Bidonim, the different magicians who would let you visit the dead. You know, we'd say from Malachim. And all the kings, that what's driving the Nevi'im up the wall? Not only are the Nevi'im the kings not stopping Avot Zarah, they're like, you know, leading the Avot Zarah parade. Shaul clears Avot Zarah. So he's militarily successful. His midos are good. His military, spiritual success. We see the depth of Shaul's goodness from Shmuel's reaction. When Hashem tells Shmuel that it's time to choose a new king, and Shmuel doesn't want a new king. And Hashem has to tell Shmuel, "Ad masai atemis abel Shaul, how long are you going to mourn Shaul for?" Despite all the disappointments that Shaul puts Shmuel through, Shaul and Shmuel are unfortunately similarly named. It's probably not a coincidence because their destinies are so linked, but it definitely does make it confusing when trying to give a shear. But you see from Shmuel's reaction, the goodness of Shaul. Shmuel is not mourning for just any Tom, Dick, and Harry. So the Navi testifies to his goodness. He's successful militarily, successful religiously. Shmuel loves him. We scroll down, and we need to ask, what is it then that leads to Shaul's failure? So the Gemara asks this question. I'll read this Gemara inside because it's absolutely fascinating, absolutely essential. And then we're basically going to spend the rest of the shiur exploring what exactly this looks like. and why it is absolutely essential for us to understand what leadership in general is all about, and for sure for us to understand what David is all about. So the Gemara begins, it has a puzzling statement about Shaul. The pasuk says that Shaul ben Shana Shaul b'malchav, which read literally would mean that Shaul was 1 year old and he became king, which is ridiculous. So the Gemara says, Amar of Huna, Kiven Shana. It was as if he was 1 year old. Meaning what? Shalo ta'am tam chet. He had never touched the taste of sin. Shaul was absolutely pure, did not sin. That is why he's compared to a 1 year old. Think to Rashi on this week's Parsha, Chai Sarah, where Sarah was 107 and 20 and 7 and had the spiritual purity of a 7 year old, right? So Shaul takes that to the next level. Because not only does he have the spiritual purity of a 7 year old, he has the spiritual purity of a 1 year old. Might be a debate whether a 7 year old or a 1 year old is more pure. You know, sometimes the 7 year olds can look angelic, but they also can be pretty challenging. You know, tried to put two kids to bed before starting up this year. So that's Shaul. Never tasted sin. Maskefla, Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak, the Gemara says, Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak asks a logical question. Well, one-year-olds are not always pure and angelic. Maybe he's a one-year-old who's filthy with dirt and with feces. So, right, so joking a little bit. Who says Shaul was so good? Maybe Shaul was a total disaster. Maybe he was just totally immature and sinful and a total disappointment. So, Gemara says, that night, Avule or Nachman Siyuta B'chalme. So Rav Nachman had a terrible dream. So Amar, Neinesi Lachem Atzmo Shaul ben Kish. He apologizes. I answered you, the bones of Shaul ben Kish. He realizes he made a mistake. He should not have insulted Shaul. That Rav Huna was correct. That Shaul was actually very innocent. It didn't work. The next night, Hadar Chazas Yitu B'chalme. It was a bad dream the next night as well. He realizes he was not sufficiently deferential to Shaul. Amar, Neinesi Lachem, I answered to you. Atzmo Shaul ben Kish, Melech Yisrael, King of Israel. Right? He's still a king of Israel, even though he gets deposed and his dynasty falls. Shaul's legacy is such that he still needs to command that respect from Chazal. Now here comes the key line. After establishing that Shaul's personality was as innocent and pure as a child, Amar Yehuda Mar Shmuel, he asks the basic question in Sefer Shmuel. Why doesn't Shaul's reign last? After all, right? Whereas going to ask also, Shaul is going to sin, but David is also going to sin. David's sin with Bathsheba, in many ways, can be understood as far worse than David's sin, than Shaul's sin with Amalek. So why does David retain the dynasty and Shaul does not? Gemara just puts it out there. And look at the Gemara's answer. Totally not what you would expect. His dynasty couldn't last because he had no problems. It's not what I would expect. The answer should have been his dynasty didn't last because of all the problems he had. No, where it says Shaul was too good to be king. We will not set up a leader over the community, unless he has, a little translation would be a box of rats behind him. No, nowadays we'd say skeletons in his closet. If he gets too haughty, we tell him go look behind him. Okay, so the Gemara has identified Shaul as someone who comes into the job pure and innocent. And it is that purity and innocence, it is that fundamental goodness, that lack of skeletons in the closet coming into the job that renders him unfit to rule. So that sounds nice, but we need to understand what that actually means. Because what, we want to have some like biker gang, thug as king? Like what exactly are we looking for? What's the Gemara after? What is the idea that we're trying to unpack over here? And we're going to see what the Gemara is getting. And it all begins with two psukim about what Shmuel tells Shaul is going to happen when he becomes king. It's going to be a whole process, and it's going to culminate in Shaul becoming a new person. V'ne'apachta le'ish acher. Once you become king, you are going to transform. And the Navi says that's exactly what happened. V'ne'apach lo elokim le'vacher. New heart. Leadership changes. Royalty certainly changes. And the question for Shaul is, how is it going to be that the innocent and good and kind and pure personality that came into the job, as good as anybody has ever been, better than anybody in Israel, the Navi said, when that person suddenly takes on the burdens of leadership, what is that going to be? So we're going to look at a few themes tonight. There are a couple more that I put into the outline that I sent out in the email. So let's take a look. First theme, major theme that Shaul has is that appearances can be misleading. It comes up again and again. It comes up really from the very beginning, right? The first thing that the Navi told us about Shaul was that he was taller than anybody else. It comes up later on in that first parak. That first parak, Shaul and his lad are looking for some donkeys. Shaul's lad seems to be the dominant personality because he keeps on making suggestions what we should do. Shaul says in Pasuk, hey, let's go home. And then the lad says, no, we're near Shmuel. Let's go ask him if he can help us out. Shaul says, I don't have anything to give to him. The lad says, don't worry, I have some money. So the Shaul does not come off as a leader, but he's physically impressive. As you scroll down a little bit, we'll see as they approach Ramah, which is Shmuel's hometown, so they see some young girls by the well going to get some water. Shaul and his lad ask them, do you know where the seer is? Where's the prophet? Where's Shmuel? And you don't even have to read the whole thing inside to see that the response is very, very wordy. They say, they should have just told him, he's in the city. Instead, they tell him, "Hine lefanecha, maherata, right? Hurry up! He's just came to the city. I am balair. There's a carbon today. It's at the bama. When you come into the city, timtsunoso, you'll find him. But hurry up! He's going to the bama. The people aren't going to eat until he comes. He's going to give a bracha. Then they'll eat. You should go." It's a very, very long, very, very wordy statement that these girls at the well make. So Gemara asks, "What exactly is going on here?" First opinion the Gemara has, there are some young girls who like to talk. Okay, that happens. But the second view the Gemara has is that no, it says Shmuel Amar, this is the same Shmuel who in the previous Gemara talked about Shaul's perfection being too good to be king. Shmuel says to the Gemara in Brachos, why do the girls talk to him so long? Very simple, because he was the best looking man in Israel. So the Navi drives home repeatedly that he looks, you know, he's the perfect person to play the leading role. He looks that way. The people are talking to him that way. But consistently, appearances with Shaul are not what reality is. Things that you think what they are is not what they actually are. And that's going to plague Shaul beyond the level of appearances, as we'll see in a few minutes. But this Shaul himself is obsessed with appearances. In the parak of Amalek, when Shmuel is furious with Shaul, so Shaul is not focused on doing tshuva. He begrudgingly eventually says, okay, I sinned, now come with me. What Shaul is obsessed with is the political support he needs. He needs the zakenim, those elders, those the tribal leaders who he wrested authority from. When he became king, the zakenim got sidelined. And Shaul is very politically aware of the fact that he needs to keep himself on the top and these guys under his control. He needs the appearance of support from Shmuel. So he tells him again and again, three times, come with me, shuv imi b'shtachavel Hashem. Come with me and I'll bow down to Hashem. Is the bowing down genuine? No, because Shmuel keeps on yelling at Shaul, get it in your brain, Hashem is furious. Because you did not listen, you did not obey his command. But Shaul needs the people to see him bowing, and he needs them to see Shmuel with him as he does so. It gets to the point where Shaul is so desperate to do this that when Shmuel turns away to leave, Shaul actually grabs him by the cloak to physically pull him back. He's obsessed with how things look on the outside. That plagues him a couple of prakim later when Goliath shows up, the Plishti giant, who Shaul should be the one to fight. But Shaul is awed by his physical height and strength and weapons and thinks there's no way that I can take him on. David HaMelech is the one who understands, no, there's more to life than what meets the eye. And if he has bitachon, he realizes that there's a way that he can get this guy down, right? Shaul doesn't see that. Shaul just sees the baseball card. He sees the statistics, right? 6'9", 300 pounds. These are the weapons. He runs the numbers and says, there's no way I can take this guy on. He doesn't look past the level of appearances to see the level of reality. Even after Shaul comes back from fighting Amalek, Pasuk says something very interesting. Hashem tells Shmuel after the Amalek episode that Shaul messed up. He's furious with Shaul. So Shmuel needs to find Shaul. Interestingly, Hashem doesn't tell Shmuel where Shaul is. So Shmuel has to ask, where is he? And it turns out, what's he doing? Levi says, Shaul came to the Carmel. This is not the Carmel up in the north. It's the Carmel in the south. V'hinei matziv lo yad. He is making a monument to his victory. Now think about this for a second. What was Shaul supposed to do? He's supposed to wipe out Amalek, get rid of their memory, blot them from the face of the earth. What does Shaul do instead? He sees this as a political opportunity to set up a giant statue memorializing his victory over Amalek, because he needs everyone to see the victory that he has pulled off. We need a monument there to show what I did for the people, something visually impressive. It defeats the whole purpose of the commandment that he got. The commandment was blot out their memory. Instead, he's memorializing the victory. So he just doesn't get it. He doesn't understand what the mitzvah is. He doesn't understand the concept of mitzvah in general, as we'll get to. But it's all appearances. And he has the looks, right? He looks the part. And he himself cares very much about what things seem to be on the outside. And ironically, this person who is obsessed with the visuals doesn't see that in himself. Part of the tragedy of Shaul is that the one who's obsessed with visuals misses his own impressiveness, right? Everyone else looks at him and they see a king. So Shmuel has to tell him the famous line, Im katon atabe necha roshite Yisrael ata. You may be small in your own eyes. You may be plagued by insecurity. You're not a natural leader, despite everything you have going for you. But roshite Yisrael ata. What matters is not what things look like. What matters is what things are. And that is true in terms of physical sight, right? Goliath doesn't matter what he looks like. In reality, he can't hold up to David. Shaul, in your own eyes, you are small. Reality is different. But that gap between the way things seem and the way things are is something that Shaul is never able to close. And what it all comes down to is this fundamental discomfort he has in his own skin. He's never able to truly understand and appreciate, take on the role of leader. And in this regard, he is consistently contrasted with David. You want to be a king, you want to be a leader. Shlav Aleph has to be to understand reality, right? You can be into politics, and David certainly knows how to do politics. He understands the need to put on a show, the need to give off certain messages. We'll look at that when we get to David more in depth, when we get to Shmuel Beis. But David never, ever loses sight of the underlying reality. You have to have that down in order to really lead, right? The fancy visuals can impress for a few minutes. You know, the slick ad campaign can get you a couple points in the polls for a little bit. But you really want to lead, you have to understand the fundamental reality. Comes up with David, right? With Goliath. Goliath sees David and he's unimpressed. He sees a little boy, but we know, and David knows, that he's so much more. Shmuel is unimpressed. Shmuel is looking for someone who's good looking. We don't have to go into details for now, but he's looking for someone who's good looking. And Hashem needs to tell Shmuel, that's not what I want in a leader. Hashem does not look at the physical attributes. You want a king? Don't look for the person who's the tallest. Don't look for the person who's the strongest. Hashem Yirah Lelevav. It comes to Jewish leadership. We're not looking for Achilles. We're not looking for the strongest hero. We're looking for Hashem is looking at the lathe. Okay, and this comes to a head with David and Michal in Perek Vav of Shmuel Beis. When David comes back, he's bringing the Aron Kodesh to Yerushalayim, and he's dancing. And he's making a spectacle, and it's not a dignified look for the king. It's not the way the political consultants would have crafted the image of royalty that they're trying to present, because that's what the pollsters think you need to have to get maximum support from the people. And Michal Bas Shaul, she's called, right? She's not called Ashes David. She's not called David's wife. She's called Shaul's daughter, is horrified and says, you are not looking the part of a king. It's been revealed to the handmaids. What are you doing? And David says, appearances do not matter. I realize I'm in front of Hashem. I don't care about the visuals. I care about is the reality, right? And what matters is, what matters is for me to realize that I'm before God. I do what Hashem wants me to do. I don't do what the political consultants are necessarily telling me. The image is not what matters. What matters is the reality and the basic piece of reality. And that David is always able to keep in mind is the importance of following the will of Hashem, which we're going to see in a little bit. So that's the first theme, the gap between appearances and reality and how that's essential for a Jewish leader. Second one, and here David and Shaul are really going to share this in parallel ways, is the corrosive power, the corrosive force that political power can have on family relationships. Shaul is first introduced as a son. The Navi talks about Kish, a very important leader, and he has a son, Shaul. And Shaul comes off as a very dedicated son. Concerned about his father's property. He's concerned about his father's concern. He says, we need to go home because my father is going to be worried about us. He's a loyal and dedicated son. He's a family man when we are first introduced to him. The lev acher that he receives, the transformation he has, the transformation he needs to be able to lead, it ends up poisoning. And you see it in his relations with three different family members. One is Yehonasan. Perek Yudalit of Sefer Shmuel Aleph. Bnei Yisrael fight a battle against the Plishtim. Shaul kind of comes up short, while Yehonasan is a hero and an unbelievable success. Behaves really in a way that's very parallel to what David does a couple of prakim later against Goliath. He leads a single-handed charge against a vastly more powerful and more numerous enemy force and leads them to victory. And Shaul clearly sees Yehonasan then as a threat. Long story short, Yehonasan violated an oath which Shaul made all the people take not to eat any food. Yehonasan did not know about the oath, or doesn't seem to have known about the oath. And Shaul comes off as more than happy to put Yehonasan to death. Says it twice, right? He even swears, "Ko yasal okem v'ko yosef ki mos tamus Yehonasan." Now, on one level, you might see Shaul's integrity, that he had sworn whoever violated the oath would die. But it seems clear that Shaul is also very uncomfortable with the success that his son is having at his own expense. And the proof is that people are horrified by this conduct. They say, Yehonasan's going to die? They say, Yehonasan saved us today. Chalil chay Hashem yipol misaras oshavarta, kim elokim asai yom asai. Hashem chose Yehonasan as the vehicle for deliverance. Shaul, you need to realize that Hashem is on the side of Yehonasan. That is not the person for you to tell. Which, of course, is just that foreshadows everything that happens with David. David is not Shaul's son, but he is Shaul's son-in-law. The same thing happens. It becomes increasingly obvious to everybody that God has chosen David. Shaul cannot handle that. And Shaul keeps on trying to kill his own son-in-law because of the imagined threat to his own power. So goes after his son, speaks disgustingly to his son when Yehonasan defends David. He calls him Ben Navas Hamardus, which Rashi essentially translates as the son of a you know what, referring to Yonatan's mother, i.e. Shaul's wife. I mean, he's out of control, right? When it comes to the prospect of losing power, he turns on his son, he turns on his son-in-law, and in many ways, really the most, one of the most painful ones of all is what he does to his own daughter. And the Pesukim just lay it out there. Pasuk Chaf and Chaf Aleph and Perek Yechas, take a look at this. Pasuk Chaf tells us, "Vatahav Michal Bashaul Es David." It was a doomed love affair. But ever loves to say, it's the one time in Tanakh that instead of talking about a man loving a woman, Pasuk talks about a woman loving a man. Michal loved David. Everyone loved David, but Michal particularly loved David. They tell this to Shaul, and Shaul is very happy. Now that's great. Shaul should be very happy. David is a very eligible bachelor. He's the general of the army. He was just a hero of Goliath. He's like, great. The whole country loves him. He's the one who Shaul already promised to be his son-in-law. Because Shaul promised whoever kills Goliath will marry my daughter. Gemara in Taina says that Shaul should not have done that. You know, it's all about this week's parsha, because the Gemara says that there were three people who said something that wasn't wise, right? Shaul said, whoever kills Goliath will be my son-in-law. And Eliezer says, whoever gives me some water will marry Yitzchak. But, you know, it could have been anybody. The Gemara says, in both of those cases, it worked out because Shaul gets David. So this should be awesome. David's perfect. Michal loves him. Everything should be great. What's Shaul's reaction to Pasuk Chafal? Take a look. B'yomer Shaul, at Nena Lo, I'm going to give him, I'll give her to him. To he lo lemokesh. The reason why Shaul is happy is not because of this perfect shidduch between a loving daughter and a wonderful son-in-law. Shaul is ecstatic because he sees opportunity here. She can entrap him. To he bo yad plishtim. Through Michal, I can get David dead through the plishtim, because David, Shaul will turn to David, not directly. He's going to have his lackeys tell David that if David wants to marry the son of the king, he needs to go kill 100 Plishti warriors, hoping to thereby get David killed. Now, it's not going to happen, because instead of killing 100 Plishti warriors and dying in the attempt, David will succeed and he'll kill 200 Plishti warriors. But you just have to take a step back and realize what power does to somebody who comes in as that innocent and good family person and is now so obsessed with maintaining power that he looks at the love of his daughter for David as an opportunity to get David killed, right? That is just not a normal way to think, but that is the corrosive impact that kingship has on Shaul. The issue we talked about the first year, right? The challenge of we need leadership, but leadership can be poisoned. Is exactly what happens with Shaul. B'nai Yisrael need a king, and Shaul is very successful militarily, but look at what it does to his soul, turning on his son, turning on his son-in-law, turning on his daughter. And in this regard, as we see, David does not have an answer. When David is going to be king, he's going to go in the exact opposite direction, but it's going to be just as bad. Because instead of David trying to get his, you know, sons killed or use them in nefarious plots, David is just going to let them go to spiritual rot. We're going to have rape and we're going to have murder. We're going to have rebellion. And David is never going to stand up against his kids. So, you know, you want to know, you know, when I was in Yis Micha, they always talk, you know, going into the rabbinate, so the rabbi's kids, how is that going to work? We want to know what it's going to look like to be in a position of leadership and manage a family life. Shaul does not have the answer, but David HaMelech does not have the answer either. It's just, it's an endemic challenge to the, an endemic challenge. Truth is, the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, Eli is a Kohen Gadol. He has the same problem. His kids are also totally corrupted. The Navi just puts it out there. We're not, Navi's not giving us answers. The Navi is giving us sometimes answers. There are some cases where David has answers. We're going to look at one great example in 2 seconds. But here's one which is just putting it out there. Power and family do not mix. You know, fifth time around is the charm. David succeeds with Shlomo. But there's so much wreckage along the way. It's just, it's human frailty, human limits. It's something to daven for, but it's not something that either one of them has a solution to. Something to really think about. Okay. The third and maybe the most important theme is the king's will with lowercase k, lowercase w, or the king's will with an uppercase k, uppercase w. Shaul can never appreciate that Hashem's will is not his own. And I suspect a lot of that is because he comes into the job so perfect. Shaul does not know failure. He comes into the job having never experienced failure. Everything's been good. He was always that good kid in the class. It's the kid who got straight A's. It's the kid whose parents are always proud of him. It's the kid who was always first in sports, right? He was the best athlete, best looking person. He never knew failure. And he was never in a difficult situation where what he wanted was not what Hashem wanted, right? He comes into the job. I think this is a big part of the Gemara was getting up before when it said he doesn't have any dofi. He does not come into the job aware of his flaws because he doesn't really have any, right? You talk about the flaws of a flawless leader. When you come in without flaws, it's easy to miss how leadership can corrupt you. Because if you know that you have issues before you come into the job, then you can maintain some self-awareness. Once you're king, who's going to tell you that you're off the right track? The advisors that are surrounding you, they're going to talk straight. They're going to be a bunch of yes men. So you have an amazing pasuk, which just puts it all out there super clearly. Perchav Gimel of Sefer Shmuel Aleph. David is on the run. Some guys come to Shaul, and they tell him where David is. They give him David's whereabouts. What is Shaul's reaction? Vayomer Shaul, Beruchim Atem Lashem. You are blessed to Hashem because you had compassion on me. There's every reason to suspect that Shaul means that completely genuinely. He does not take Hashem's name in vain. In his brain, Hashem wants him to be king and wants him to defeat David. Now, Shmuel told him already that he's losing the kingship. Shmuel told him already that it's going to be given to someone better than him. Shaul may wonder how it's already Parachav Gimel and he has tried to kill David for 5 prakim, and somehow every time he tries, David miraculously escapes his grasp. He might wonder, maybe Hashem does not want me to be king. Maybe he wants David to be king. It should be blatantly obvious. But not only is it not obvious to Shaul, not only does he refuse to give up the desire to be king, he refuses to realize that what Hashem wants and what he wants are not the same thing. And this is the issue. This is the core weakness that Shaul has. It all comes from an inability to recognize his own flaws. Ironically, the Tosefta and Bracho says that Shaul was chosen as king because of his humility. Tremendously humble when he comes into the job. But as someone who is not, has never failed, he naturally and understandably thinks that what he wants is good. There's no check that is placed on him. And this comes up consistently. It's driven home again and again in the parak of Amalek. And it's funny, it's sad, but it's funny the way that the Navi brings it up. Hashem comes to Shmuel after Shaul does not wipe them all out. And he says, I regret this. I never should have made Shaul king. As Devarai lo hikim, he did not perform my commandment. Two psukim later, Shmuel goes to Shaul. And what does Shaul say? Baruch atel Hashem, hakimosi es devar Hashem. I fulfilled Hashem's command. Two psukim ago, Hashem said, as Devarai lo hikim. Two psukim later, Shaul says, I did fulfill Hashem's command. Now he just puts it out there. Shaul, in his own mind, is perfect. And it's for good reason he thinks that way. But he cannot realize that the royal will and the Melech Malchi Hamlachim will are not the same. You can't realize that he's making mistakes. You can't do tshuva if you can't realize that you are in the wrong. And Shaul cannot get there. Just can't get there. Again and again. Shmuel tries again and again. Why didn't you listen? Right? Pasuk Yates. Lama lo shamati b'kol Hashem. Why do you listen to Hashem's voice? Shaul, one pasuk later. Shamati b'kol Hashem. I listen. That never penetrates. Shmuel mentions the kol Hashem again and again and again. And Shaul just cannot get there. Scroll down. With David HaMelech, sometimes Shaul gets close. Perek Chavdalid, after David snips off the hem of his garment and shows him, Shaul says, Sadigatamimeni, I realize that I'm wrong. I realize that you're going to be king. You're going to be king. And what happens immediately afterwards? He slides back. Right? Two program later, one barak later, he's chasing David again. He cannot, sometimes he gets close, he can't internalize it. Erchavches, the whole episode of the Eshet by the Balat Ov, when Shaul needs to bring Shmuel back from the dead, what happens? Shaul tries to get an answer from God. He goes to the Urmatumim, he goes to the prophets. Hashem does not answer him. Message is clear. God has abandoned you. Exactly as Shmuel said was going to happen. Does Shaul take that for an answer? No. What does Shaul say? If God will not come to me, I'm going to get my message some other way. Bakshuli Eshes Baalas Ov. Get for me a woman, the Baalas Ov. I'll find some other way. He just cannot get to that. He cannot get to that place. He just can't get there. And that is the key difference between him and David. Because David was not perfect, was never perfect. We'll look next week at how David's imperfections are put on display when we first introduced him. But that is what allows him to maintain the Yirat Shamayim and that fundamental connection to reality. We talked about the differences between appearances and reality. David is grounded in reality, and he's also grounded in Yirat Shamayim, meaning, and it's real Yirat Shamayim, he can understand that what he wants is not always what Hashem wants. You know, we think in our own lives, like that happens all the time, right? Whenever people rationalize things, it's ultimately about explaining how really, really, really we're doing something good. We're not doing something for us. It happens to be we benefit from this, but we're doing it for the right reasons. Alachas kama v'kama, that could be something people are so susceptible to when there's so much on the line and there are so many people who are kissing up to them left and right. But David, of course, after Nasan tells him that blasts him for the sin with Bathsheba, of course, he immediately just responds with two simple words, Chatasi Lashem. There's no fighting. There's no rationalizing. There's no defending, right? He gets the rebuke from the outside. He accepts the rebuke from the outside, and he just acknowledges it. We go back to that parak in Tehillim, Yud Tes. So we saw the Abarbanel quote a couple of weeks ago, where David is talking about Yiras Hashem Tahoro Manislah, right? The fear of God is clean. Talks about Torah. And David is able to say at the same time, Gamav Zachanis Harbahem, I've tried my best to keep the mitzvos. But he also realizes that he sinned. And he hopes for tshuva. Nikesi mi Pesha Rav, please cleanse me from my great sins. David can realize the good he's done. And he can realize the bad he's done. And Shaul can't. And he can say, Yulu Ratzon Imrefi. May my will be Hashem's will. We say this pasuk in davening every day. Yulu Ratzon Imrefi. But think about that for a second. You have to daven that what I am asking for is what Hashem wants. Because David realizes that that is not necessarily true. And that is so easy to take for granted. And Shaul does take it for granted. And David does not. And that right there is the key to being a successful Jewish melech. How can you keep up Yirat Shamayim? By realizing that you may be the king and be above everybody else, but there's someone above you, and that's Ribbono Shel Olam. And it's his will, which is the one that ultimately matters. And it can be different from yours. And Shaul comes in without any dofi, without any skeletons in the closet, is just not able to realize that. If he had the issues in his past, that would have made it that much harder for him to convince and rationalize and tell himself that he's perfect, because that's always was. The problem Shaul has is that when he is transformed, when he gets that lev acher, he does not have any failures in his innocent past to keep him rooted and tied down in Yirat Shamayim. And David is able to do that. The last theme for Shaul is that the Navi has an amazing way of showing how things come full circle. And we'll show three examples, two of which show Shaul's failure, one of which will show Shaul's success. Because as much as we hold up Shaul as the foil to David, we we need to emphasize the fact that in many, many ways he was successful. First example is the two visits to Shmuel. We're first introduced to Shaul when he meets Shmuel looking for a set of donkeys. The last conversation they have is when Shaul is about to die and he visits the woman at Ein Dor and she brings Shmuel back from the dead. And there are many contrasts between the two. When Shaul speaks to Shmuel the first time, it is the breaking of the dawn. And the symbolism there between somebody who's being anointed as king and the rising sun. In contrast, when he meets with Shmuel the last time, Navi says three different times that it's nightfall. Shmuel's alive the first time. He's dead the second time. First time around, Shaul is told he's going to be king. Last time around, Shaul is dressed as a commoner. He's disguised as someone who is not royalty. And Shmuel tells him he's about to die and he's about to lose everything. He's introduced in that story as very tall, taller than anybody else. And look what the pasuk says over here after he receives the news from Shmuel. Vayipol melokam aso arza. That whole impressive physical specimen of Shaul falls completely flat on his face. It's parallel, but everything is reversed. Everything comes undone. All the potential the Navi wants to drive home is that Shaul is someone who has immense potential. In many ways, we're left with an image of potential which was left unfulfilled. Potential which was corrupted by the corruptive power of Malchus instead of redeemed by the opportunities of Malchus. Second example is very similar. Shaul has two episodes of prophecy. You know, normally the king and the prophet are supposed to work together, but they're normally separate people. David and Nasan is a great example. You have the king who's in charge of political leadership, and you have the Navi whose job is to tell him when he's doing something wrong. Shaul, when he is first introduced to Shmuel and he is first told he's going to be king, so there are a series of steps he's going to go through. At the end, Shmuel tells Shaul that he will achieve prophecy. And that happens. The Navi says that was the source of a saying, Hagam Shaul Banaviyim, Shaul really one of the prophets. And it was actually the case. Same thing happens a number of prakim later when Shaul is chasing after David. And David runs to Shmuel's base medrash to find protection. And Shaul comes after him. And the same thing happens. Again, in the environment of Shmuel, Shaul has prophecy. But this time it seems like things are seriously wrong. Vayif shakam hu begadav, he strips off his clothing. Again, the royal clothes are removed. Vayif snabeg am hu lefnei Shmuel vayipol aron. But he falls down naked. Kol hayom v'chol halayla. It sounds like the prophetic spirit overpowers him, demeans him. We're left with someone who is just not able to handle the divine message. And the Navi again says, that is from that episode that the saying came forward, Agam Shaul Banaviyim. The first time that Shaul approached Shmuel, he achieves prophecy. He's told he's going to be king. It's inspiring. He's together with the other prophets, and it's all successful. The next time he approaches Shmuel as he tries to hunt down David, the exact opposite. He's removing his royal garb. The prophecy is a prophecy which is demeaning, and ultimately it's showing that he's not worthy. He had the potential to be both a true melech and a true navi. One way of understanding the pesukim here is that he ends off as neither. He's losing the malchus, and he can't be a true navi either. There's one other way to understand this pasuk, though. Some of the other mefarshim say that no, Shaul was so intensely connected to nevuah here that it just dominates him. It says his nevuah was more powerful in this episode. But what's the point? That Shaul can be either a king or a prophet. The hope in the beginning was that he could be successful politically and successful religiously. But that is the challenge he's not up to. The goodness in Shaul was always there. He always had the potential to be a Navi. But in order to get there, the world of politics and leadership had to fall aside. One of the two could not survive together. And that is Shaul's failure. The other way of understanding how things are coming full circle. Seeing the potential come up short. And either comes up short because Shaul could have been both a Melech and a Navi, and he ends up as neither, Or it could have been a Melech and a Navi, but it ends up that he can only have one of the two. We see he cannot combine both in a way that David HaMelech will be able to. But the last one is actually inspiring. Shaul has two interactions with the attendants of his at the beginning and end of his career. Beginning was with that lad he had looking for the donkeys, where you would not know that Shaul was the leader and the lad was the assistant, because the lad kept on saying what they should do. Let's go visit Shmuel. Let's go get some donkeys. Let's go give Shmuel. I have some money to give him. Na'ar was the leader. At the end of Shaul's life, when he's on the Battle of Har Gabala, the Plishtim are all around, and Shaul is wounded, and he realizes that he has no chance. He turns his weapons bare, and he says, just kill me. Kill me before the Plishtim get me, and it becomes a disgrace. What happens this time? His assistant does not dare. Navi says, Lo avan nosei kelav ki arei me'od. He was terrified to do that. Shaul has become a true king. He's become a true leader. He's become someone who's totally dominant. The Navi here is also contrasting Shaul with someone else, Avimelech, the son of Gidom, the fake king. In the middle of Sefer Shoftim, leads his men to try to attack a tower. He gets crushed by a millstone that was thrown from a woman by on the top of the tower. Avimelech says, I don't want the legacy of being someone who was killed by a woman in a battle. That's embarrassing. He turns to his weapons bearer. He says, please kill me. The weapons bearer says, no problem. Stabs him unhesitatingly. That's a fake king. The closing image we have of Shaul is one who truly does become a leader, right? When he started, the Na'ar was leading him around. At the end, he's somebody who the Nosei Kelim is totally awed by, Yarema Od. And so much so that when Shaul takes the sword and falls on it himself, the Nosei Kelim can't take it. Vayipol gam hu al harbo vayamas imo. He falls on the sword with him. That is the leadership. That is the power that Shaul is able to exude. So we have someone who is so complicated. And Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish both sum it up with this Mendrash earlier today. They both take a look at Shaul ultimately. Rabbi Yochanan says, and it's a drasha what Shmuel had told him, that Shaul will disappoint in all of Hazeh, but ultimately if he manages to do tshuva at the last minute and accept the divine judgment, he'll merit to join Shmuel in the world to come. And that is exactly what Shaul does after a lifetime of convincing himself that what he wanted and what Hashem wanted were the same thing. He finally is able to acknowledge that there was a gap, that Hashem has decided that he has sinned and that he is going to die tomorrow. And instead of running away from the battle, he bravely turns around and goes back to his men and fights with them, even though he knows what's going to happen. Sidur Kadin, and it is at that moment that he redeems himself and merits to achieve a full share in the world to come. And Reish Lakish, who normally always argues with Rabbi Yochanan, here agrees with him fully. Reish Lakish says it's a beautiful image. As Shmuel goes to war, when Hashem goes to war, he knows he's going to die. Medrash says, Hashem called the Malachim. The Amar Lahem, Bo'ru'u Beri Hashem Rasi Ba'olami. Look at this creature that I've created. Normally, when someone goes to a party, he does not bring his children with him to a party because he's afraid of an ayin hara. Shaul is going to fight and he knows he's going to die. He does not want this to happen, but he's accepted. You know, tell Banavi Mo, he takes his children with him to battle. And he rejoices in the judgment which is coming after him. So Shaul is someone who ultimately has the good. There is so much success in his political career. Ultimately, the goodness does shine forth. The tragedy is that it takes such an extreme to get him to realize it. And the core difference between David and Shaul is that point that the Gemara made earlier. It is the fact that Shaul specifically is so unflawed coming in that makes him unable to realize when he is mistaken, unable to realize that there is a gap between the Ratzon of the Melech and the Ratzon of the Melech Malchim HaMalachim. He gets there at the very, very end. As we'll see next week, we'll see how David in this regard is the exact opposite. We'll see how David's flaws are on full display in the beginning, but that how counterintuitively that is going to be essential for his ultimate success. So thanks everyone for making it. Sorry for the confusion. Mitzvah, looking forward to closing out this mini series next week. Okay, shkach, everybody.